Hey sis, this is Desiree. I am your host of Hey Sis, I Got You podcast, and we are a pop-up podcast. Why are we a pop-up podcast? Because sometimes things in our lives just pop up out of nowhere, and we want to bring you raw, authentic conversations that speak to where you are to help you to get through what you're going through. Listen, we will also have some live shows, and I hope that you decide to join us then. But when you hear the bell ringing, hey, Hey Sis, I Got You is on. Don't forget to join us. Drop us a line. And hey sis, remember, I got you. Hey, welcome to the space where real talk meets real support. I'm your host, Desiree, and this is Hey Sis, I Got You podcast. The podcast made for women showing up, growing through, and glowing up. Here we talk life, healing, health, sisterhood, and everything in between. No judgment, okay? No filters, just love, truth, and the support that you didn't know you needed. So grab your tea, take a breath, and let's get into it. Hey, Sis, I Got You podcast again. And we have our special guest who would also be joining us more often as we continue on. Her name is Dr. Faith. Dr. Faith, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, guys. My name is Dr. Faith. I am a board-certified OBGYN based here in Houston, Texas. And first of all, I am so honored to be here, and I love this the goal of this podcast, which is about education and empowerment and just literally building a community where you can feel comfortable getting the information that you need. So thank you so much.
Awesome, Dr. Faith. So Dr. Faith, I'm so thankful that you said yes, that you would join us. And this is actually a kickoff to Hey Sis, I Got You podcast, where one of the things we're going to talk about is menopause and the depths of it. It's not, I don't think people will understand how it just doesn't affect women medically, but it also affects personal parts of our lives. And so today we're going to just talk a little bit of one-to-one about menopause with you. And I just wanted to ask you, what was the first thing you heard about when you first heard about menopause? What did you hear?
When I first heard about menopause, I knew it was a condition that affected a lot of women, but to me, it was like a black space, if that makes sense. A black
space. You went out, Dr. Faith. Dr. Faith, just to let you know, you went out. Dr. Faith. We are having a technical difficulty.
Can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. Yeah.
I apologize. So what I was saying is when it comes to just menopause, it seems to be a black space, right? This unknown, not just for, you know, patients, but even sometimes for providers, right? Just in how we're taught. And yeah. So I feel like it's one of those things that, kind of like when people talk about their periods, like, you know, it exists, but you just don't talk about it.
Yeah. That's a good point when you say you just don't talk about it. I remember growing up and my mom, I never heard her talk about menopause, but I heard my grandmother saying something to my mother that I've always remembered and held on to. And I didn't know why she said this to my mom, which I'll say what she said in a moment, but I realized that she was talking to my mother about menopause. And I remember, so what my grandmother said was, if you feel like running, don't. And I remember her saying that. I was like, why did she say that to her? I was a girl. But I actually am so thankful that I heard her say that, because years later, I actually felt that run. And it was in the middle of the night, but I won't go into it on this talk. But when we start talking more personal, I'm going to share my story about how when you feel like running, not to run, really helped to save me, I believe, from a breakdown. So, so it is a black space. It is a space where people don't really talk about it, almost like they're ashamed of it. Would you agree?
I would agree. I definitely would agree. And it's a situation where you end up kind of, if you do finally feel comfortable talking about it, you do, well, at least what I've seen from what my patients have told me is that they'll lean on what other women have done or tried.
Mm, yeah.
Because of not wanting to, like, you know, put themselves out there. They'll just kind of whisper. So, you know, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like the taboo around menopause really has to stop. And I think it's important that we have this conversation. So I'm really thankful, Dr. Faith, that you said yes to me having you on our show. So my next question to you is, how does menopause affect relationships, like with a person's partner, their spouse or spouse?
You know, this is a great question. I think one of the things that is a well-known menopausal symptom is vaginal dryness. Can I use the word vagina?
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is unscripted. I don't know if I told the people it is unscripted. So you're going to hear truth. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right. So, vaginal dryness is a very common symptom. And so I describe it, to women as, you know, maybe you feel like there's sandpaper down there or feel, you know, that's that discomfort. Mm. And so when you have that as a symptom, you're not necessarily going to want to have sex, or it can feel uncomfortable or even painful, right? Mm. So you have that physical issue, and then you got the mood change issue, mm. right? So you got the mental, emotional, and then you got the physical. So that definitely can affect a relationship with your partner or with your spouse. And there's some surveys that talk about how I think 44% of women said it made them feel less connected, mm. even with your partner. So one of the things that you could do is literally to communicate, right? Healthy yeah. relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, our base, or at least the foundation, should be communication, yeah. To maintain that level of intimacy and satisfaction.
I love that. I think, you know, I agree with you. Communication is the way to connect with our partner, our husband, or our spouse, and let them know what we're experiencing so that they could try to understand, you know, as best as they can. And I'm actually going to be doing a talk on men on pause. and so
men on pause. I love it. That's dope.
Thank you. Thank you. So that's coming up soon, because I want to talk about how we do when we are experiencing this dryness or this emotional place, drought, you know, so to speak. We do put them on pause, because it's like, look, I need to get myself together. I can't give you what you need at this moment, but please, you know, just bear with me. But I also, I think, as I was saying earlier, that the taboo around talking about it doesn't help women to know how to communicate about it, because we're so closed off as women to even talk about it. I've recently started seeing people talk about it on different shows or what have you, but it's been quiet for so long, it's almost like crickets, you know, starting to make sound, you know. And so, but trying to find the right there's no right way to deal with it, except that, hey, this is actually happening, and how do you deal with it personally, right? Would you say it's important how you as a person deal with it personally?
Yes, I do, because it's everybody's symptom during that time is going to be different.
Yeah.
Right. And your tolerance of it may be different. Your belief systems about what you are comfortable taking or not taking may be different. So it's truly a situation that is kind of customizable based on what you desire. Right. So for some women, you know, low libido and sexual health is incredibly important.
You went out.
Uh-oh. So what they'll do is, you know, focus on that. And then for some, during this transition, it may be weight gain that's an issue, right? And focus mm-hmm. on that. So, and, you know, you talked about how, you know, you're seeing it more. Funny enough, this sounds very odd, but my younger brother, mm-hmm. you know, I was sharing, you know, the work that I was doing, you know, in women's health outside of the office. Mm-hmm. And he told me about a podcast, you know, Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he did with Halle Berry talking about menopause.
No.
this, oh, so yeah, you did, yeah. And I'm like, you're like in your 20s. How do you even know?
Wow. Wow. So a man wants to talk to a woman about it.
Yeah.
Interesting. I love that. No, I have not heard about that. Wow. But wow. Yeah. So it's a great, it's something that is needed so that we as women can know how to teach our daughters what to expect. You know, so that they can know how to deal with it. I remember back in the day when I was growing up, hearing about women who had menopause, how they had breakdowns and how they were put away back in, you know, years ago, put in mental institutions because no one talked about it. No one knew how to deal with this thing that was causing women mental, emotional emotions. You know, and so I'm going to ask the next question. I meant to say this earlier, but these questions are from people who wanted to know more about menopause. And so leading into what I was just saying, segueing to what I was just saying, there was a question that says, why am I feeling more emotional or mentally foggy during menopause? So let's deal with, why do women feel more emotional during menopause?
So it, you know, it has to, again, do with the estrogen levels, right? That hormone, the hormones are the main culprit, right? So the estrogens affect the brain chemicals in the body that regulate your mood. And those chemicals are serotonin and dopamine. And so that's going to affect not just the mood, but your sleep, your memory, and, you know, these mood, the swings that you may have. So it's not all in your head, right? There is real biochemical changes that are going on. And just even, you know, when you have poor sleep, you also have poor mental clarity.
Oh, so, that's where the fog comes from. Okay.
Right, right. Okay. So,
do you hear people say, I have brain fog? That's what, right? That's it. Okay.
Right. Kind of when people talk about pregnancy brain, you know, so these hormones are affecting your brain.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. 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 That's good, Dr. Faith. So here's another question. Does menopause impact women from different cultures in different ways? And that's a heavy and that's a loaded question because, you know, we think we all experience it the same way. Do we? Don't we? There you are.
So, you know what I think? I think that your physician has to be on alert for how you're feeling, right? Because I feel like just in general, you know, we're busy in the office. Sometimes a physician may go through seeing you, you know, 10 minutes, 2 minutes really quick. Cause you hear the complaints. You can hear complaints of patients who may say, I waited in the waiting room for an hour or two, but I saw you for 1 to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So there's that. Right. And then there are some studies that talk about, yes, there is actually differences across cultures. For example, like in Japan, only 10 to 20% of women will report hot flashes, whereas in America, 70 to 80% of women may report hot flashes. Right?
Well, can you repeat that?
In Japan, about 10 to 20% of women may report hot flashes, but in the U.S., 70 to 80% of women may report hot flashes. And African-American women are more likely to report hot flashes than, you know, the counterparts of, you know, of white or Hispanic women. Yeah. Yep. And sometimes the symptoms tend to last longer. So again, that whole cultural taboo-ness of it, right?
Yes.
Can make your experience of it be a little bit different. Right.
Yeah. So I'm thinking like African American women, could it be that our percentage is higher because of the stress levels?
The thing about stress is that affects cortisol levels, which affects your estrogen. Right. And, you know, I'm personally very, you know, have my own projects about fibroids. And that's one of the things that is a concern about how stress can impact your gynecological health. And I believe that there is a deeper connection and meaning about the whole self-care movement beyond getting your hair done and painting your nails.
Wow. Like,
there is literally I believe, physical and biochemical improvements that can happen. We don't give ourselves enough grace, number one.
Yeah.
And scheduling in self-care or just me time. Mm-hmm. I literally, you know, when I talk to patients, I ask, so what do you do for yourself? When do you have time for yourself? And it's I don't know why it's so hard to do.
It's so hard. Yeah, I would say, I'm going to say for me, I helped to raise my late sister's 4 children while raising my husband and I raising our daughter. And so at one time, we were raising 5 children. You know, we went from one. Well, our son was, he was a little older at this time. Well, he was like 18, 19. And so we went from one small child to a house of 5. Right. And I honestly did not know how to carve out time for me for years. I mean, years. And I thought when I go and get my nails done, I am carving out that time. But I really wasn't, because I would take some of the kids with me, you know, maybe my daughter and my niece. But I did not know how to have time for myself. And I found myself extremely stressed, like for years, and angry and just overwhelmed, and just I was just so frustrated, felt like with life, I didn't know how to properly take care of myself. I didn't, you know, so I think it's easy to, for some women to know how to carve it in, you know, but some of us, if we didn't see our mothers do it, then we don't know how to do it. I never saw my mom take care of her, take time for herself. I never, never, you know, she was either cooking, cleaning, maybe out on a date or something. But other than that, my mom did not take time for herself. So honestly, I kind of think that is what showed me, which I believe that was something that I learned not to do, because my mom raised 11 children as a single mom after my stepfather passed away. And so I just watched her keep doing what she was already doing. Home cooking, cleaning, washing, you know, raising us. And that was it.
You know. And you know what? It's actually interesting that you said that, because I had the opposite experience. Mm. I watched my mom take care of herself.
Really?
Meaning, like, she's not on medications. Like, as you know, obviously she's older than me, obviously. But I always thought, I'm so proud of you. Like, she takes a, I don't know, like an iron for fun, you know? So,
wow.
I was like, mommy, you know, thank you, God. Thank God for, you know, me witnessing that growing up, and those genes, because she looks extremely young, and some people say I look young for my age. And what she would always tell me growing up is, take care of yourself. So for when I had my first baby, right, she would literally tell me, do not, I know you want to wake up and start breastfeeding and, you know, all this stuff, you wake up, you go shower, you go take care of yourself.
Oh my dress God. Up. Really?
Then come take care of the baby. Ma'am.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Even when I call, like, I'll call, you know, when I was, like, in college, or when I left and went to Boston for medical school. So it was my first time, like, away from home, right? Mm-hmm. And I started missing home. And so I would call my parents. They're like, oh, okay, you calling us now? And they would be like, we are having dinner. Call us back, please.
Really? Really? Yes, ma'am. Wow.
Yeah. So they set these boundaries. Well, yeah, I think I learned, I saw them set healthy boundaries for them to take care of themselves. I think for me it's a little bit different, because being a physician is such a self-sacrificing profession that, you know, I have to unlearn some of the occupational stuff, because a lot of people are burnt out. But just as a woman, I do believe, you know, like you mentioned about watching your mom and having that experience, mine was slightly the opposite.
That is so interesting.
I know, right?
I mean, like, completely different.
Different.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so you could call home, and they're telling you, not now. Basically, they set up boundaries for themselves. Now, this is very helpful, because for me, I now am going to use what your mom taught you for my daughter. I most definitely will. Because although she's 19, I'm going to tell her this. And I know she's going to look at me like, what? But I'll tell her, because I didn't have that. And I don't want you to grow up like I did through when she becomes a mother, you know. You know, one of the things, I have this friend, and she's a cousin, but a friend as well, on my husband's side. And she takes care of, she takes time for herself. She goes out to eat by herself. She goes on vacation by herself. She takes long cruises by herself. And one of the things it took me to turn 30 years old before I would ever go out to eat by myself. 30. Wow. I was 30. And I think I only did it that one time just to prove to myself I could do it. I never did it. Okay. And it's bad. Yeah. But that's bad. So I want to teach my daughter. So I brought that up to say, I tell my daughter, I say, hey, cousin so-and-so does this. I said, but that's terrible. I had to tell her it was somebody else who did it. But that's what all I had to give her. I said, she takes herself out to eat, goes on vacation, blah, blah, blah. So recently my daughter actually took herself out to eat. And at 19. And I thought, wow, she heard me. You know, so anyway, mm-hmm. But I love that you have the actual testimony of it. Wow. So so the different culture. So here's another question. Is it normal to feel anxious or depressed during menopause?
I do believe that is not uncommon, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm answering this question carefully, not to oversimplify it, because depression and anxiety does exist outside of menopause, whether you know it or not, or mm-hmm. you know, but I don't want people to explain away real mental health challenges with mm-hmm. hormonal changes.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. So I do think if you do have the symptom of feeling, you know, depressed or feeling anxious, that you should go and get seen so that a provider can mm-hmm. tease those symptoms out for you.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to earlier, you were talking about communicating like with your partner when you're going through menopause. Here's another question that we have is, how can I talk to my partner about what I'm going through? So how can someone literally just talk to their partner? Like, how do you engage in conversation? Like, hey, I'm experiencing this, you know.
Just like that.
Oh.
just like that. I'm struggling with sleep.
Mm.
I may feel more tired. You know, sex feels uncomfortable. Mm. I would love to explore solutions together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I do believe, you know, sometimes men want to help but don't know how. It's actually funny because I did a different podcast with, I was a guest talking about fibroids, and one of the hosts is a man. And his question, which came out of nowhere to me, actually was, how can the men help our women going through these symptoms?
Wow.
So he wanted to know, as a man, how can I help support my partner in life that has fibroids? So the same way we think about all these conditions, I feel like we need to give men more credit, voice, mm-hmm. and accountability, right? Yeah. Like when we talk about pregnancy stuff and maternal health, I'm like, it's not just, yes, it's a woman's body, but it's also his child. He has a
wow.
body, you know?
So
I do believe that being vulnerable, which I think you should be in a relationship, and simply saying how you're feeling. Because think about this: what would you want from him to do the same?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so I think just sharing your feelings without keyword here, ladies. Without expectation of a certain type of response.
Wow.
Because they don't know. So you may feel your feelings and expect him to say this or to do that. Like, give him grace, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense? So I do believe partners do want to support, and what you can do is simply open the dialogue by sharing your feelings.
Okay. I like that a lot. Yeah. I think that that's a great response to that question, because they do want to know, like you said, the guy on the podcast you were on, he wanted to know, how can they help us? And one of the things, like, I talked to my husband about the different experiences that I have had when I first started feeling menopausal. It was overwhelming. And my thing is, I really want to talk about my experience on here. I guess I'll share a little bit about it, but I plan on taking it to one of my other talks because I don't want to keep giving the same information. But this part I will share is that I had to wake my husband up through the night for almost a year when I first started experiencing it. It also actually makes me emotional when I remember back how I was feeling, and I would have to wake him up because I couldn't sleep. I would wake up almost every night wide awake, couldn't go back to sleep for nothing. And I would have to get my husband wake up, babe, you know, can you pray with me? Can you, I would go downstairs. I just couldn't settle myself. I was wake up out of sleep. And my husband would pray me through, literally, like, have to pray with me. I had to start, like, doing prayer confessions over myself because I couldn't understand what I was experiencing. And, it's so the emotion of it, everybody goes through it differently. But it's a real thing. Menopause is real. But I also believe that, you know, I just called on God, on Jesus to help me because it was too much for me to deal with. It was too much. There are some things that, you know, I'll talk about it again. I know I keep saying it, but this will bring you all, ladies, you come back to the upcoming shows. You're going to hear more about my experience and other ladies' experiences with menopause and how, you know, share some of our coping mechanisms, and it may work for you. I hope is that it does work for you. Everything that works for one person doesn't mean it's gonna work for someone else, but hopefully what we share will be helpful for you in this journey. So here's another question. Can menopause impact my work performance or job security?
I do believe it can. I think.
Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to say most definitely it can affect you. I'm telling you, it will impact your work performance. I remember being in the classroom having to open the door to get air because I was just hot as I don't know what. Just he just came from the back of my neck to the top of my head. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. I'm telling you, God has brought me through. God has brought me through this thing. And so I just want to say that, and I want you to give your medical, you know, your perspective, but I know it does impact your work performance. Whereas I'm talking about throughout the day, opening the door, feeling like I need to walk off my job.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh. No, I mean, and that's real, right? The degree of the hot flashes, right, can be disruptive. Yeah. And then, you know, what I was just going to simply say is just, you know, the ability to focus with confidence because of that brain fog.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and that's just makes work more challenging.
Yeah.
And then you're not necessarily wanting to, like, you know, work has codes and ethics, right? So you may not want to talk.
You went out again.
You may not want to talk about what you're experiencing and just the, you know, maybe vulnerability about it, or even wanting to ask for breaks and schedule changes and stuff like that to be more accommodating. Yeah. You know, we do that in the pregnancy space. We do that if, you know, you need to step out to do surgery, but it's, it definitely can. Like you said, I think your response was spot on.
You know what? You just made a great point. Thank you so much for that. You made a great point. How, yeah, when we are carrying our children, we do take maternal precautions or what have you. I need to take a break. I need to blah, 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 whatever. And menopause should be treated not the same, but similar, because it affects women differently. It really does. It affects us differently. And I, instead of me walking out from my job, you know, I stayed there. I persevered. And I remember one time I had to tell my co-teacher, I was like, you know what, I got to go. And I actually left. I had to leave because I couldn't take it. I'm telling that menopause is no joke. Wow. It's no joke.
And you know what's so funny? Not funny, but think about it like this, right? When women are in the opposite end of the reproductive lifespan, like they're just getting their periods, like you know, the 14, 15 year olds, you know, that in the beginning when they're having pain so much, they can go home from school, right? They get the letters. It's like, okay, we understand this is a woman's issue affecting you at this age.
Yeah.
Leave school, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the fibroids and stuff like that, women have heavy bleeding, And I think I saw something recently about how Europe is giving, you know, menstrual leave. Like, this is illegal. This is a law.
No way.
If you're having your painful cycles, you can take time off from work.
I love that.
Right? So I think menopause is going to catch up.
It's going to be a minute. Because if they're just catching up right now with cycles, you know, I remember my sister, when she first started getting her monthly years ago, she would have to leave school. She could barely walk.
Yeah.
And my daughter, her experience, well, I'm not going to go to her experience because I'm on here and I don't want to put, but anyway, so yeah, it needs to be respected in a way that it is a medical condition. I feel that way. Yeah. So, okay, I have one more question, and then I just want to talk a little free time with you, ask you some things about yourself, okay?
Okay.
So are there financial costs, this is a question, are there financial costs associated with managing menopause symptoms, like maybe treatment or time off work?
Absolutely, right? So menopause, it carries obviously the medical costs, but also the hidden emotional costs. And so...
Yours went out.
With menopause, I apologize. So with pause, estrogens are low. Yeah. And so, hello, can you hear me?
And now I can, yes.
Okay, I apologize.
It's okay.
So with menopause, your estrogens are imbalanced and are low, but what people now do is spend money replacing them. Oh. So things like testosterone to support that transition is a very commonly used things like the pellets. They can be expensive. Mm-hmm. Some people may seek alternative treatments or positions to help support themselves. Then, you know, we talked about vaginal dryness in the beginning. So mm-hmm. people are spending money on lubricants and supplements and just things to help their sexual health. Like mm-hmm. I prescribe something for patients and they'll come back and tell me it was super expensive. I will not be getting that, you know, and it's
kind of like,
yeah. So, just medical treatment can be expensive for sure. And so I think those are very common costs. And then obviously we talked about the emotional costs, earlier, before, and depending on the woman, she may or may not, you know, reduce her hours at work to accommodate for how she's feeling or leave right at certain times. So,
yeah. Wow. Okay, that's good. Thank you, Dr. Faith. So, Dr. Faith, I wanted to share with our listening audience that I've asked you to come on from time to time and do a Let's Talk to Dr. Faith with me. And so I wanted you to share some of the work you've been doing and what women can expect to hear from you this upcoming season.
Thank you. And I really do appreciate the invite. For me, this coming season, I am, as I mentioned before, going a little bit more in. I'm going in on my passion about helping women overcome fibroids. And just recently, I think last week, Venus Williams came out with her own story about being misdiagnosed for a long time and having, you know, to be a woman of influence and, you know, even being a champion and still being misdiagnosed or dismissed. So my big issue is the amount of time wasted on diagnosing a fibroid and getting treated. Especially for women of color, where you not only have issues with Black maternal health, but then now you have issues with fibroids and potentially fertility. So I've been doing more advocacy and awareness work. So I have a book coming out this month. This month is Fibroid Awareness Month. So I'm super excited about it. It's called Take Up Space.
Love it.
Yeah, Take Up Space. 7 strategies to navigate and confront the current fibroid crisis in our nation. Mm. I'll be doing a book tour starting at the end of the month.
Love it.
Yeah. And then I'll be on some news stations as well. So, I'm going in. So I'm really excited. about this journey and just trying to help women as well.
I love it. I love it. I look forward to having you on our show to share more. And when the book is out, you know, interview you on your book and, you know, bring more awareness to it, because I had a fibroid when I was pregnant with my daughter and scared that I would lose her, that it would grow as she was developing. So I get it, the pain of it as well. So Dr. Faith, thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to bringing you back on for Let's Talk with Dr. Faith. Okay. So for our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for Hey Sis, I Got You podcast, where your host is me, Desiree. And I bring very interesting guests on that can share truth, love you through it, help you get over whatever you're dealing with, or help you at least point you in the right direction to get the help that you need. So thank you for listening to Hey Sis, I Got You podcast. I'll be back. Talk to you soon.